It's The Night Side with John Heslink.
Okay, we are changing gears here. 12:32, almost 12:33. Phone lines, we're going to open them up right out of the chute. 872-1010, 1-800-561-CFRB, and start talk, because on the line with me right now, Master Spy himself, Bob Dobbs. Bob, are you there?
Yes, good morning, John.
Now, Bob, are we allowed to say where you're phoning from this morning?
Singapore.
Singapore. So the bloodhounds are still out after you.
They've always been and will continue for the next 30 years.
Wow, Bob. You're always looking over your shoulder. I mean, you spent many years as being the master spy for the Council of Ten and the Club of Isles, and you're actually the man who introduced Camilla Parker Bowles to Prince Charles, so you basically started that whole kerfuffle.
Yes.
That's your fault. We're blaming you, Bob.
That's all right.
And joining me here in the studio is Nelson Thal from the Marshall McLuhan Center for Media Studies, basically to translate whatever you are saying into somewhat, I guess, homogenous English.
Yeah. Now, I think he has a CD. Let's play a little excerpt.
We got a CD standing by here, do we?
We've got a CD cut.
And we have a CD cut, okay, and our technical producer here, Keith Walter, has the CD all queued up. So we're going to hear a few minutes of this and then come back and talk to you, are we?
Yeah, this is about Bob's Media College.
So is it going to make sense? Is this CD actually going to make sense?
Yes.
Okay, let it roll.
Bob's Mediacology works on four levels. On the first level, the most complex, the formal level, it's programming our sensing environments. For example, we programmed visual space for 300 years under printing press conditions. Mm-hmm. Then we brought in acoustic space retrieval with radio, and then tactile space with television. So, and that's tactility, television. So you're working with the tactile sensory environment.
Okay, that's number one. Period.
That's the first level, the most general sensory programming of population. The second level of Bob's Mediacology is controlling basically advertising. But we call it advertising and programming, or advertising and then the show or the information. But from the perspective of the first level, they merge. But on the second level of Bob's Media Ecology, it's programming media content, mm-hmm. which is usually a previous environment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I'll say about that level. The third level is bureaucratic media ecology, which largely consists of Big Brother work. What Orwell tried to whistleblow on with 1984, that is basically assassinations, political smear jobs, framings, sort of battles behind the scenes.
Now we're getting interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, right. That's the third level of programming. And then the fourth level is what I'm an expert at, is collective clairvoyance. And that is the sum of the first three levels that are creating a synergistic effect, greater than the sum of the parts, that is the result, day in, day out, of what all these various levels of programming contribute to.
Okay, so
what
your
fourth level is the final level.
And when you say clairvoyance, does that mean that through nothing else other than the activity of the mind, you can direct all of these three levels to one point of interest, to one aim, one collective goal?
Well, if you think of mind as inside your skull, then you're limiting. That's a Western cultural percept. ESP is gesture as well. Mm-hmm. It's actually using all your faculties, so that tactility, comprehensive tactility, would be complex clairvoyance. And this is the effect of crowds and individuals intermingling. I guess the best images of that are fractals.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be an approximation.
That's a computer-generated image that has a kind of infinity to it.
Yeah, the same order it keeps appearing while there's amazing detail, variety. So that is an approximate visual image in motion of the sum total of history and evolution.
Yeah, but we're distracted more, I think, by the third level than by anything.
Okay, now, Bob, that is you chatting there with, I don't know, who are you chatting with there in the CD?
That's Brent Bambury, CBC, April 30th, 1992.
Okay, so you talked there for about 2 minutes and 40 seconds. Basically, I didn't understand a whole lot of it. What were you saying in simple layman's terms?
Well, I was explaining how one, in my position on the Secret Council of Ten, how I implement conspiracies. In other words, how I implement control, or how I implement conditioning. And the four levels were just by bringing in a movie environment, as we did in the early part of the 20th century. We create a hyper-kinetic space for the population. They get duped by the sensory extension of kinetic space.
Now, when we think of conspiracies, Bob, and, I mean, there you are this morning sitting in Singapore, all comfy, and you're not in any immediate danger.
No.
Nelson and I, we are sitting here in Toronto, where it's, by the way, minus 7 degrees. And we are wondering, Conspiracies, that seems to be a word out of the 60s and maybe even the 70s. Do they still exist in the 90s?
Okay, first of all, conspiracy is also associated with World War II and the Nazi regime in the 30s, right?
To a certain extent, yes.
Yes. So in the 90s, actually since 1945, but since the 70s, information about conspiracies is the most important, the most dangerous, and the most avoided information in our time. And the reason is that because all the electric environments, the computers, the satellites, the television, the telegraph, the teletype, all this imploding electronic information forces people to rely on one person to make decisions, because the buck is always passed, because we really can't get a sense on the sequentiality when we're surrounded by a simultaneous environment. So we pass the buck. So that means someone in the end is going to make a decision. Usually it's called intelligence agencies. Now, from the population's point of view, especially in those parts of the industrialized world where they pretend to have democracies and may have democracies, the idea of one person imposing their view, like his interpretation of the grand patterns, like an executive fiat on the population, seems to be undemocratic. So that is considered a conspiracy, because the authority is not representing the will of the people. That's the myth, anyways.
Bob, is an example of how conspiracies are ignored is with the JFK movie of Stones, where he's trying to put across a part of history which we experience but miss the meaning of, and yet even though it's out there now, we ignore it?
Yeah, the important thing about Stone's movie is that he picked the medium of the movie, which is a meaningful medium, an archetypal medium for the American population. There's over 1,000 books on the JFK assassination. His movie resulted in another 100, say, but at least 800 before his movie came out, and not one of them had a dramatic effect. The point is, the book is not an important medium. When Stone put the conspiracy idea within the movie medium, the American conditioned kinetic space archetype, then it shook the place up and brought in legislation.
Well,
the important point is the medium he chose.
What are some of the people who are following conspiracies today? What are the interesting recent ones? I mean, do you want to talk about the Oklahoma bombing and Skolnick?
Well, an interesting one that Lynn LaRouche has come up with, a theory, is that the fondo, the moneyed interest behind the royal family, which goes back centuries, and the royal family per se, they just get to share, sort of live the privileged life, but the money situation goes on in the investment. The theory LaRouche is presenting is that the people who control the royal family are creating scandals around the family because they want to move the monarchical base in England out into a global situation. They don't want to be a...
Do you think, Bob, there's actually a conspiracy afoot somewhere to shake the monarchy loose?
Yeah, LaRouche, that's not what I think, but I've just said, Nelson's asking, what's the latest theory? LaRouche proposes that they're going to shake out the royal family and move the oligarchic funds, the fondo, that's the technical term, out to operate globally.
Well, why are we all surrounded now by these theories of conspiracies, whereas the impression is that in the past we weren't surrounded? Is it merely the electric surround and the Niagara Falls of data that creates this illusion?
Well, that's what I was trying to say. Yes, who's going to pull the levers in the end? The fact that when we're discarnate, and we all are, we float in and through each other. And we float through and in each other through the electric media. So in that sea of a kind of a ghostly environment, almost like Hades, hell, we're looking who runs the place. Now, someone has to run the place and make decisions in programming the environment, as I outlined in that opening quote. And so there is a conspiracy. There is an imposition by one person. Some people might say it's the beast, or they might say it's the Antichrist. It actually is me. But the thing is that I took the responsibility because everybody disappeared into this dreamland.
Bob, let me ask you a question. Now, if there's something that we have to watch out for, I mean, you've had dealings with organizations like, for example, the CIA, right?
Yep.
The CIA, will we safely say that their day has passed?
Yes, they've moved into the realm of entertainment.
Well, not only that, I think it's important for our listeners to understand that the minute the organization becomes publicly known, the action must move elsewhere.
Yes.
And for instance, the organization, the minute it's known, it's then turned into a bureaucracy.
Now, what's interesting, Nelson, is that there's nowhere else to move when we're all floating in and through each other. All right? So it's that's what the Secret Council of Ten is. It orchestrates solar theater. That's what I do. I'm off the planet. I'm operating from a position off the stage.
Now, Bob, there are many people that would agree that you are definitely off the planet. I'm going to open the phone lines here, and let's see if we can get some of our callers to challenge you. 872-1010, 1-800-561-CFRB, and Star Talk. If you're understanding what Bob Dobbs is talking about, and I'm not putting myself in that number, give us a call, 872-1010, 1-800-561-CFRB, and Star Talk. Bob, the question to you right now, then, if there's one thing that we have to stand on guard for and watch out for, what is that in the next couple of years?
Me.
You. You're the bad guy. And here I am freely putting you on the air. Maybe I should be chastised.
Yes, not that I'm a bad guy. It's just I'm the programmer, and so you better pray that I make the right decisions.
Well, you're the man on the spot. Now,
that's
Angleton
right.
Worked for you.
James Jesus Angleton, yes.
And Norman Holmes Pearson didn't work for you, but studied under you.
Yes.
Who was the father of American counterintelligence. Maybe you could run through an inventory of some of the conspiracies and some of the programming. Another good name for conspiracies, by the way, is programming. And that's what we... And I think one of the things Bob is trying to say is that the computer has made us aware of programming the environment, and the programming of the environment is just another name for...
You know, I'm starting to get the feeling, listening to Nelson and Bob here, that the world, the universe as I know it, doesn't really exist. There are no corporations, there are no individuals, there are no unions, there are no rights. But somewhere, there is somebody in a back room pulling the levers and making all of us dance sort of like marionettes.
That's exactly right. Now, here's the point why there's no unions. There are no categories. Unions merge with pension funds. Pension funds merge with governments, which merge with corporations. You cannot make a dividing line in that seamless web. So there are no nouns, just floating verbs.
Everything's basically disappeared.
Now, that's the most advanced fact.
But there are unions. There are still unions. That is a fact.
The after image, I think, right?
No, the union is an image in a newspaper or on the news. It's a public relations gimmick. The point is that the security and the sense of feeling and solidarity in union doesn't exist. It only exists through the press releases.
Okay, so, all right, fine. Let's take it now. Let's go back. Because we're dealing with complex clairvoyant events here, and we're dealing with invisible changes.
Oh, you're losing me.
Well,
unions exist at a different level than news releases. I mean, my God, you've got thousands, hundreds of thousands of people paying union dues. It exists at a dollars and cents level at that point.
That's the hobby. The hobby is to go to work. In this situation where in the solar theater where everything's flipped, your work is your hobby and your hobby is your work. People do their most work when they process the information environment. They do that daily. That is the main action. The information world, AT&T, are more involved in creating an experience than anything that people do on their jobs. That's why people drop out.
Bob, do you and Nelson actually get invited to, like, you know, parties? I'm just curious.
Well, I give a lot of parties myself. I tape a lot of people at them, too.
Hey, I would love to go to one of your parties, Bob. I would love to, without a tape recorder, just me, just to experience the actual fact of a party at Bob Dobbs.
Bob, let's get...
If you keep me on the radio, maybe you will.
Bob, James Angleton said that the twin of poetry was espionage, and the twin of espionage was poetry. There was a real link between them. As I mentioned earlier, Norman Holmes Pearson, the father of American counterintelligence, was also a poet.
Yes.
Many of the top people in the intelligence agencies came from the field of English literature. Does this explain why many of the people who work with you have a penchant for wanting to back channel like this to people who are interested in knowing, even though the information you have is top secret?
Well, poetry is software and hockey is hardware. They're both within the software environment of electric information. But poetry tends toward large patterns. And to deal with the Secret Council 10 level, you have to think and perceive in large patterns. That's why we use poetry. The main text we've used over the last 40, 50 years, which is a crowning achievement of poetry, is Finnegan's Wake. Now, most people can't even conceive of how to perceive Finnegan's Wake. But within it, there's a code to how to govern this situation. So poetry as an exercise in perception is how we use it.
Bob, let's grab a couple of phone calls here, shall we? The phone lines are open at 872-1010, 1-800-561-CFRB and Star Talk. Master Spy, Bob Dobbs, on the line with us from Singapore this morning. Richard, good morning. You're on CFRB 1010. We just lost our Master Spy. We've had a problem here with the phone lines. I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick pause. We're going to try to reestablish contact with Singapore. And the night side will continue right here on CFRB 1010.
Now back to the night side with John Heslink.
12:50 and we are back. Technical problems notwithstanding, we have reestablished contact with Singapore. Bob Dobbs is our guy, master spy for the Council of Ten for many years, and also the guy who introduced Camilla Parker Bowles to Prince Charles, so he's responsible for that whole thing. Also in the studio here with me in Toronto, Nelson Thal from the Marshall McLuhan Center for Media Studies. And we are dealing with questions, questions dealing with conspiracies. We were just about to go to Richard. Richard, you're on the air. Good evening. Welcome to CFRB 1010.
Yes, good evening. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I have two questions, actually, for your guest.
Go ahead.
What does he know anything about the killing of Malcolm X? And was there any type of conspiracy behind that? And also, what does he know anything about the World Bank and the IMF?
But yes, I know a lot about those things. Now, let me tell you something. As I said, conspiracy information is the most dangerous information today. Mm-hmm. If I told you who killed Malcolm X, John will be in trouble, the station would be in trouble, and I would be in trouble. So, are you willing to protect me?
Who's
the caller?
Well, how about a hint?
Well, of course there was a conspiracy there. And, recent literature is pretty accurate.
I see.
Right? You got that new book?
Which one? The FBI files?
Stephen somebody on the Martin Luther King assassination.
No, I'm talking about Malcolm X.
Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah, the recent book on Malcolm X.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is pretty accurate.
See. Which book is this?
I can't remember. I think his first name is Stephen, the author.
I see.
It's the one that came out about a year ago.
Is that the FBI files? The one?
Yeah.
I see.
Now, the thing is that it's as close as you can understand it in categories, but who really pulled the trigger and what happened, you'll never know. You will never know.
Yeah, but do you know, Bob?
Yes. Because
and who else knows?
Bob,
who else knows, Bob?
What?
Bob, who else knows besides you?
The people who were involved, like I was. I was involved in the cover-up of that assassination.
Now, why is that in the best interest of anybody, to cover up an assassination?
Well, I wasn't in the... because we don't want the people I was working for didn't want to be caught.
Well, obviously, but what about the people at large? I mean, you are coming on the air here. You're talking to us as, Bob Dobbs, all-around good guy.
No, I didn't say I'm a good guy.
So you're a bad guy.
I'm just saying that I'm a tetrad manager, and I have to deal with the environments you created through our history of technological evolution.
But, Bob, following that train of thought there, Richard and I are just asking a question here. Does that make me a bad guy because I'm putting you on the air?
No, because I can't create any information in terms of who killed what. I'm not going to tell you who did what, so you're not a threat. So we can now talk about larger patterns, which is not as dangerous.
Yeah, but it's also...
So what about the IMF and World Bank?
Well, they don't exist anymore other than as legacies of visual space, which is money and gold. Now, you have people being actors. The global theater has room for millions of manager actors, role players. Role players who are acting on the global theater to distract you and provide content for the media.
So who are they working on behalf of?
Well, since everything largely has disappeared, they're working for me. But I'm the only one left, and I'm trying to resuscitate you.
They're working for you, eh?
In the sense that they are distracting you from what I'm doing.
What are you doing?
I'm bringing in fusion on many levels, including cold fusion that Fleischmann and Pons are going to bring in that are going to free you from Toronto.
Now, how do we know that they're actually going to do this? They've been talking about this for years and years, but talk is cheap.
There's over 600 labs around the world who have proven the experiment, but you will not be told this in North America because that's the oil center. The thing is that they have confirmed their experiment themselves in France right now. They will win the Nobel Prize within 2 years.
Bob, trust me on this. If somebody somewhere comes up with a method of powering an entire city for 12 cents a month, we're going to find out about it.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
I think one thing, John, I want to say about this is that the categories good guys, bad guys becomes very, very difficult to recognize when you think about the fact that Saddam Hussein was a good guy when we were at war with Iraq and they took our hostages. But then all of a sudden, after a few years, he became a bad guy. And so bad guy, good guy, once again, are categories.
You've got
and in order to understand...
Now, let me interrupt you.
Wait, let me just finish.
Brief. You've got to think in terms of quantum physics. Everybody is at least a quark, and we're approximating X particles, which are hypothetical and only appear when you have radioactive decay. We and the media are all on the level of subatomic physics, and you can't categorize them with as good or bad because virtual particles themselves pop in and pop out. They don't even exist very long. That's what you're trying to say.
Yeah. But I'm on Richard's side here. Richard asked a question about Malcolm X. I don't think the question's been answered. Richard, do you feel like you got an answer to your question?
He wants to know if there was a conspiracy. Of course there was. He wants to know who did it. I did it. I was involved in the cover-up. I didn't pull the trigger. But I cannot name names because those after-images will come after the station.
Yeah, he's a criminal, Richard, and that's why he's in Singapore this morning.
That's right.
Richard, thanks very much for the call, bud.
Okay.
Take care. Sorry. Moving right along here, we got George standing by. George, good morning. Welcome to CFRB 1010.
Hi, good evening, John.
Good evening.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Who's
the name of the spy in Singapore?
That would be Bob Dobbs.
You sure his first name wasn't Truly Ted?
Truly Ted?
Yeah,
who's he?
Is his real name Ted?
Whose?
Who?
Your name, Bob.
No, it's Bob.
Oh. It was never Ted, eh?
No.
Oh, you sound like somebody I talked to 10 years ago. That's why.
Where'd you talk to him?
Somewhere in Canada.
Well, have you got an interesting question? We want to move.
Yeah, I do actually. Who's behind the right wing conspiracy in North America?
The computer environment. The computer environment hoists up electric individual autonomy. And so you move into individualistic Leibnizian monadic values. The monad, the individual, you float around the planet. You are essentially a right-winger when you have the computer satellite environment. And when you move out of the tribal effect of TV, which was before the computer and the satellite, you move into individual narcissism.
All right.
Right-wing values.
All right, now, Bob, let Nelson translate that.
Okay.
What was he saying?
What he's saying is that we're all part of the problem and we can all be part of the solution. What he's saying is that the culture gets influenced and shaped and molded by the technologies that we employ, that our sensory portfolios and the way we think of each other and the way we act is changed and adjusted by the tools that we use in order to communicate with each other. And what he's saying basically is the top-down conspiracy plays catch-up to the bottom-up.
The bottom-up is the technological environment.
The bottom-up is the technological.
You know, the next time we do this, we have to have a translator for our translator.
Well,
I'm starting to understand bits and pieces, and I'm thinking maybe, Bob, that this is probably the scariest thing of all.
Yeah, that's right. It will frighten you, John.
Yeah.
That's you're getting to perceive the present.
Now, George, did you get anything out of that?
Well, yes, I did. It seems to me that this person doesn't know what he's talking about.
That's very scary to me,
because
George.
I sort of have a pretty good clue what's behind a lot of the politics in the movement. And
okay, give me a clue.
Go ahead.
Well, it's not actually a few individuals, but it is a few groups of people who are having fun experimenting, and it's just grown from that.
Can you name them?
Why should I name them for you?
All right, well,
you
what kind of people?
Who
laboratory scientists?
Huh?
Are they scientists? Well, who do you mean?
They're not scientists. They're basically backroom politicians who have a great time doing stuff like this.
Are they working with...
It's not a great conspiracy, as we'll put it that way. It's just basically a movement of minds, and the public eats it up. And it is through the media, of course.
Why does the public eat it up?
Well, because they tend to be fooled at times.
Why would they want to be fooled?
They don't want to be fooled, but they can be fooled. You know, advertising works, and so does the media.
George, I think I'm being fooled. I want to thank you very much for the call, though, buddy.
No problem, guys.
Take care. 12:59, and this is The Night Side. We are on the line here to Singapore this morning with Bob Dobbs, a master spy, for the Council of Ten. He's our guest, and also in the studio here, Nelson Thal from the Marshall McLuhan Center for Media Studies. I'm John Heslink. The Night Side continues right here on CFRB 1010.
In your life misbehaves, what he might need is a good spanking.
Hello?
When next we go to the phones, you'll meet the authors of the book Give Your Man a Helping Hand.
Hello, hello, hello.
Stop that.
The Motts 1 to 4 from News Talk Radio, CFRB 1010.
7:07, and we are back on the Night Side at CFRB 1010. The phone lines are all open, and in the studio with me, Nelson Thal from the Marshall McLuhan Center for Media Studies. In Singapore, Bob Dobbs, master spy for the Council of Ten, and we're talking about conspiracies this morning. To listen to you talk, Bob, I'm kind of convinced myself now that conspiracies exist at every level, at every turn, that nothing just happens by happenstance. There's no such thing as coincidence.
Well, think of the meaning of conspire. It comes from the word to breathe together. And when you study your breathing, you can't tell whether you're continuing to breathe or it's breathing automatically. It is going automatically, but if you start thinking about it, you can control it. So it is an ambiguous situation. So to breathe together is to conspire.
Okay.
So that's the ambiguity of conspiracy. The point is that we make a reality and we have a reality that's imposed on us. The thing is, we have become so inflated that we can impose our situation on all kinds of people.
Well, when you, the way I like to describe it is that when you live under electric conditions at the speed of light, reality loses its hardware quality, John.
And I'm losing my hardware quality doing this segment. Trust me on this. The phone lines are open at 872-1010. Bob, we're going to take another call here before I completely lose my sanity.
Good.
Bill, good morning. You're on CFRB 1010. Hello, Bill.
Yes.
Yeah, you're on the air. Go for it.
Hi, Bob. Actually, that's not my real name. It's Henry. I'm in the Indian Ocean right now in my submarine. We met once in my subterranean lair, and I want to tell you that you did a good job. But the John Lennon assassination, with no one really addressed too much, and I know you're aware of it.
Bill, if you don't jump back into reality real soon, you're gone.
That's the reality,
well,
Bob.
Well, that's okay. Bob, you were involved with the making of the Beatles and the testing of the Beatles as a major military operation, were you not?
Yes, it was very important to bring the Beatles to America as soon as possible after the assassination of JFK because the population was, you know, incredibly depressed, and therefore they were susceptible to a manic release. And we can make a lot of money since the record industry was a great profit maker. The young market put a lot of money into the economy, and we also could distract everybody from the progenitors of the JFK assassination, and also we could alter a paradigm shift in values because we wanted people to get isolated and then be able to move around a global economy and lose their community and family values. So the Beatles were the reason for that.
Caller, I can tell you that Marshall McLuhan told John Lennon as to how the Beatles had been created as a major military operation to distract the attention of the young off the war in Vietnam, and it was when Lennon met McLuhan that was the last time he changed his whole album. He went from Sergeant Pepper's, if you recall, Lucy in the Sky of Diamonds, turning everybody onto sex, rock and roll, drugs, to the White Album, which was a complete turnaround when Lennon decided he was going to try and update consciousness now and not be used. And that's when he did the White Album. And you remember the image of the raccoon, Rocky Raccoon, the bandit, the man who wears the mask, who hides behind the scenes.
So was that his downfall?
And if you recall, he said, back in the U.S., back in the U.S., back in the USSR. And, of course, what he was trying to say was, if you think the mind control is heavy in the Soviet Union, boys, you ought to see it here in America. So there's a... You can now ask Dobbs about what that whole thing was going on there.
Yeah, first of all, John Lennon was not a victim of conspiracy. It was done by Mark and him alone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, so all those people exchanging guns out in Georgia and everything, that was just to throw a cover off to make it look like a conspiracy, alone not to getting people to make it look like a conspiracy, to take a hideaway that it was just him working alone.
Right. The Reagan presidency that came in a month or two later was able to create a sense of paranoia by creating information that supported the paranoid view and the conspiracy view. Reagan and them were intending to create a paranoid environment. So that's why they distorted the impression of the Lennon murder.
But wasn't Mark David Chapman and Hinckley both working for the YMCA, a recruiting office for the CIA, to take out Reagan and Lennon at the same time to bring in the Bush administration?
That's what you heard through the information networks you have.
So is that wrong?
Yes.
Oh.
Bill, I want to thank you very much for the call.
Okay,
got to move along here, bud.
Okay, bye.
Okay, let's move along here to Marion. She's been waiting for a while. Marion, good morning.
Hi,
welcome to CFRB.
I better shoot fast. It's costing CFRB $12 a minute. I missed $12 a minute. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
I wanted to ask you, like, you know, we have a national deficit, $100 billion, and interest escalating here in Canada.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if the Queen has enough jewels to help us out with either a donation or a loan.
Yes, if you follow her rules.
Ah, and what might that be?
Give up your national sovereignty and merge with the eco-fascist situation of a global campus surrounded by a wonderful natural wilderness, preserving the species.
Is that in the form of a donation or a loan?
What?
The money that the Queen would be giving or loaning us.
Well, she has no money to give you. She just will acknowledge you, and she'll give you some information credits, which translates economically. She'll help the Reichmans get back on their feet again. But it is not money. It's not a loan. It's just acknowledgement. Otherwise, you're dispossessed. If you're not, all those countries that don't follow these new rules will be dispossessed. They will disappear.
You know, Bob, an interesting fact surfaced the other day when I was talking with some accountants. You know, there is one category and one category alone that is 100% tax deductible in Canada. There's one thing and one thing only that is 100% tax deductible. Would you care to take a guess as what that is?
Electricity itself.
No. There is one thing and one thing only that you can spend money on every year, and it is 100% tax deductible in this country, and it is only one category. Nelson, Nelson, you have any idea?
I don't have any idea.
I'm not
How about you, Marion?
No, I'm not. Nope. Unless it's a
political donation.
Not a political donation, but a gift to the Queen is the only thing that is 100% tax deductible. Absolutely.
That's an electric
fact. We need a gift from her.
Well, I don't know if she's ready to give me a gift, you know.
The Queen has immunity. Understand, the Queen has immunity because she represents the real economic power.
Okay.
Well, Bob, the Queen, all of us have to buy audiences, but she gives audiences. What about you?
I do everything. Because I have to imitate what you guys are living in, which is a flowing in and out of each other. And I have to mime that to keep my complex clarity.
I'm really having a lot of trouble with that, Bob, the flowing in and out of each other. You
okay,
know?
But right now you're in Singapore.
No, you're in Singapore.
But you are. Your voice is here.
My voice is there, okay.
All right.
We're making decisions there.
Right, and I can act on things you say, so you can kinetically, psychokinetically move around in this room by asking me to follow your orders. On top of that, all the listeners are, and this is going around the whole planet.
Tell the Queen we love her and we need her.
Listen, so we got everybody's in Singapore, but also we're all in Toronto, and we're all wherever other electric transistors are picking this up. We have no dimension here.
Marion, if you run into the Queen, will you tell her to call in, please?
I'll do that.
Thanks very much.
All right.
Okay, 872-1010-1800-561-CFRB and Star Talk. On the air with Bob Dobbs. He's in Singapore this morning. Bob Dobbs, the master spy for the Council of Ten, and we're trying to make sense out of the conspiracies and the conspiracy theories. Let's go to Sheila. She's been waiting for a while. Sheila, good morning. Welcome to CFRB 1010.
Hi.
Hi.
I'd like to know if there's a UFO cover-up.
There certainly is, but there's been no abductees. There's only been four people abducted in the last 40 years. Two of them were Barney Hill, and they were accurate because their description of what they were, what they remembered from it, was of a change in the star map, which became available visible another 10 or 15 years later.
What do you mean two of them were Barney Hill? They grabbed Barney Hill twice?
No, Barney, his wife.
Oh, and his wife. Okay.
Yeah. And there's another two other people who have not told anybody. Now, there are
they didn't tell anybody. How do you know, Bob?
Because I've been in touch with them, and I've played interviews with them on the radio in the old days. I call them the Exodus.
You know, Bob, if the UFOs come here and they ask me who they should grab first, I'm kind of inclined to tell them you.
Well, I've already been involved with them, and it is a question whether I've got them or they got me. But let me tell you what is very interesting and true. They're from Booties, and they're making the crop circles around the world. The crop circles are their communication to us at this point.
I thought that was peanut butter cups.
No, that's nonsense, John. Check it out.
Booties meaning the Booties constellation, you're saying?
Yeah, they're from the Booties constellation.
Okay.
And that's exclusive. It's not the Pleiadians. You will find out over the next
I've heard about
that
the Palladians.
They are from the Booties, and CFRB can brag about it.
I have heard about the Palladians. So what's the scam behind the Palladians?
They exist, but they're not interacting. You see, the Booties have been assigned to be the ambassadors because of the very ecological sensitive moment when we are introduced into this other intergalactic situation. And it's done very carefully. They don't abduct us.
You know who does the cattle mutilations? Another inferior civilization. We're running around running amok, and the booties let them do that, but it's not a big problem. They're just investigating the cattle from their own point of view. That's from another civilization. The most important and significant is with the booties, who are far more advanced than the ones who do the cattle mutilations. But the Pleiadians, they exist, but they're not interacting with us at this point. Most sightings we're seeing, and many people are seeing, are Boudin's vehicles.
Now, Bob, here's a question that's just begging to be answered then. Why doesn't somebody, you know, crop circles be damned, why doesn't somebody land on the lawn at the White House instead of some wheat farmer in Wichita, Kansas?
It wouldn't have happened during the Cold War, because it would have caused a problem, because the United States or the Russians would have demanded the technology. It would have caused a problem. They were not going to allow themselves to communicate on that level until after the Cold War disappeared. And that's why we're going to have the communication in the 90s.
What's the UFO, what's the extraterrestrials' agenda?
They're as interested in us as we will be in them, because we have evolved differently than they have. And we're not as advanced as them, but we had different problems. They basically are very interested in how we deal with a thicker three-dimensional environment than they have. They're in our universe. They're physical, but they have a different planet, a different environment. They're very interested in how we survived and evolved in this situation.
Now, Bob, they're not at all interested in having sex with our women, are they?
Not that I know of. They haven't made any advances on Connie yet.
Because I've had reports from women all over the United States claiming to have been abducted by extraterrestrials and having had sexual relations with these aforementioned extraterrestrials.
Well, when you have an environment, a satellite computer, mixed corporate media environment, where people are flowing in each other, in through each other, the unconscious, including astral plane or other dimensions, burst up over the population. Basically, the population is on LSD due to the electric environment, and these are mass hallucinations. And that's all they are.
I'm having one myself. Sheila, are you getting any good answers here?
Yes, I am. I find this really fascinating. I think this guy is really interesting. Just one more quick question. So are the governments, are some of the governments of the world, do they know?
No, only there was the sighting in Russia in October 9th, 1989, the same day Lenin met Yoko, and that was in 1989. And that was communicated to Gorbachev and several military intelligence agencies through the Western world.
What was communicated?
And they discussed it, but they did not. They couldn't do anything about it. They just were amazed that there was proof.
That John Lennon met Yoko Ono. That was transmitted to the Russians?
Beg your pardon?
No, he's saying just coincidentally.
Oh, coincidentally.
It happened in Russia, the sighting. And there was lots of news about it. TASS reported it. They were telling the truth, but then it got poo-pooed by everybody else around the world media. The point is, several people know in six NATO countries about this incident, but they are helpless to do anything about it. We are going to see a performance, a spectacle, that no government or military intelligence will be able to control. And it's not true that Area 51 has high super technology that the humans are using.
Bob, I'd like to just bring you back down to the planet Earth here. You know, conspiracy theories do spread around the world like a fire. One of the most interesting ones that I've heard recently that I did want to take this opportunity to throw at you and have you talk about is the one that's put out by a very reliable researcher in the States in Chicago by the name of Sherman Skolnick, who has had the opportunity of has a very successful track record in the States in convicting judges and putting judges on the circuit Supreme Court in the United States into jail. So he is recognized as an expert, and he is putting out the idea now that the Oklahoma bombing was a tactical atomic weapon, and that they've concreted over that site as a way of keeping the radiation in.
Okay,
is there any?
You say the name Sherman Skolnick?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's who it is.
I know you've worked with. I know Skolnick has studied you under you before.
Yeah, I know Sherman. Now here's the point.
And I'm just wondering if you could. If were you involved in that cover up? Is it true? What's going on?
The problem is that Sherman has a lot of good information, but right now he's being fed a lot of disinformation because he's a hot potato. He's accurate on some things. They have been feeding him stuff, and he's been misled. What happened in Oklahoma was exactly as it's been presented, the fertilizer bomb. The reason it caused that extra impact is because of the buildings around create a ricochet effect. And all the conspiracy theories that have developed out of suspicion that there was more than one bomb are wrong.
Okay, so basically you've put that to bed, and so that wasn't America's Hiroshima as he's reporting it.
No.
Okay, there you go, John. See, Bob's there saying there wasn't... he's There wasn't the conspiracy.
But I find myself
conspiracy, but not a major conspiracy.
I find myself in the peculiar position, Bob, and I'm talking to Sheila as well. Sheila, you're still there, right?
Yep.
I'm finding myself in the very peculiar position of actually agreeing with Bob about something. More importantly, understanding what Bob is saying about something. Yes, I believe in the whole great cosmos. We are not the best that there is. There has to be other life forms. I still don't understand for the life of me why they don't make themselves known. The Cold War is over. We are ready. We don't have to take all the technology.
They are making themselves known, John, through the crop circles, but they will make themselves known the way you're projecting over the next 5 years. It's going to be an awesome spectacle. It's something we can't even imagine, and it'll be undeniable.
Hey, I can imagine quite a bit.
Bob, you gave sort of a contradictory answer to my question. At first you said that there are no abductions and that this is all a figment of, you know, those people's fantasies. Then a few minutes later you said that there's a lower life form that are checking the cattle, so to speak.
Yeah, the cattle mutilations, that's all they're doing. They're not hassling people. They are a civilization interested in the phenomenon of the cattle, and that's what they're investigating. And many people have seen that and seen those vehicles and seen those beings, but they've either reported were not believed, or they kept it to themselves. But they are not out to get us. You see, my enemies want to project a paranoid view of the UFO contact.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, they are friendly, they're intelligent, and it's going to be a great event.
One other last thing before I go to work in the morning. There's an ancient Indian tradition of thought that says that we don't come from Earth originally, that we ourselves are ETs. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, I know a lot about that. The main fact that will be incorporated over the next 100 years in our understanding of evolution is that we were altered by the civilization from the Boothians in 27,000 B.C. And we were just, Neanderthals, Cro-Magnon.
So they're sort of like gardeners of the universe or something? Or?
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. Are they gardeners?
Not to control us, but they saw us evolving. They saw this little life form that they followed after the dinosaurs got zapped, and they saw this thing evolve, and then they said, okay, if we alter their wrist and their jaw, they will move into a more flexible capacity. And that was done, and they moved about 150 of these Cro-Magnon apes around the world, and that was 27,000 B.C., and we evolved very rapidly to the point that the Atlantean civilization was really booming in 14 and 13,000 B.C.
Sheila, I'm going to see you on the starship. I'll buy you a Klingon tea.
I'm looking forward to it.
Take care.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's move along here to Paul. Paul, good morning. Welcome to CFRB 1010.
Hello.
Hi, Paul.
Yes. Actually, I have three questions. Okay, my first question, it follows on from Sheila's question, which is, if you look at the ancient Egyptian and the Mayan civilization hieroglyphics, first of all, there were civilizations far advanced, unimaginable, and their hieroglyphics had drawings of alien spacecrafts. So I'm wondering whether he can expand on that conspiracy. Secondly, the Jesus Christ stories and what we have been led to believe in the Bible and the teachings. And there's some information about that this also is a conspiracy theory. And then thirdly, the AIDS virus and other things like Ebola virus. And is there any connection with that and certain groups, as he's leading us to believe, trying to control the world?
Okay.
Okay.
The Atlanteans were the most advanced civilization, and they were destroyed in 10,000 B.C. They moved into Egypt and several other civilizations in the Mediterranean, and they influenced the pyramids. They had their levitation devices, very slight things that altered and created the pyramids. That's true, but they died out. Their blood merged with the Egyptians. Now, the Egyptians and the Indians, Indian civilization, they were static civilizations. They had six UFO vehicles that they developed from the anti-gravity vehicles that they developed from the landing input, but they didn't know what to do with them. They weren't inclined to do with them, and they didn't have a technological change motive. All right, so that's the thing. They were advanced, more advanced than the image we have of them, but they weren't advanced the way we are today. We are anarchists compared to them, and we also change our environments and bring in new technologies. But the Atlanteans were not like the Egyptians and the Indians. That's the first thing. Now, Jesus, he did a passion. I would say the Passover plot
The idea that he and his small group of friends put on a performance piece, that is true. He survived the assassination, the crucifixion. Now, the important thing about Jesus is he was probably the greatest psychic healer going. It was true that he could heal people, that he could heal himself. He healed himself from the cross. He was put on the cross. He survived it, and he survived after, and he had regrets that everybody misinterpreted his doctrine.
Okay. Now, what was his original doctrine intended to be?
It was to that power was an illusion.
That power was an illusion.
Yeah, and then he said you should learn to turn the other cheek. The basic message he gave that the world never incorporated and finds it very hard to do. That was his message.
Paul, we got to move along. One more question, very quickly. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Yes, one more question.
The AIDS virus.
Yes.
The AIDS virus. Okay, very quickly.
Okay, I'm going to risk everybody. We might get in trouble. But it was manufactured. It's called a viral debilitant, and it was genetically engineered, and it's meant to evolve. It was meant to weaken the population, the enemy target population, so they got immune problems for 2 weeks. Then it would mutate out so that they would get healthy again. But the military aspect of it was that you move in, you take over the population without killing them, you weaken their immune system, they can't resist you, then they get healthy again.
Well, if that is the premise, though, something went wrong.
And something went wrong.
It got away from them.
Yeah.
Okay, Paul, I hope that answers your questions. I got to go here, buddy.
Okay.
Take care.
And,
okay.
John, that's why the virus becomes weaker over time, because it's programmed for 29 years to get more benign.
So you
it was programmed for 2 weeks, but it went out of control, and it'll get benign in 29
years. So ultimately, we will win out over AIDS.
Yes.
Bob, I want to thank you for spending the time with us this morning.
I hope we survived that last bit of truth.
I hope we survived the last hour.
Okay, well, great talking to you, John.
Take care, Bob. We'll be in touch.
And thanks to Toronto.
Okay. That's Bob Dobbs, and he is the master spy for the Council of Ten, and we've been chatting about conspiracies. Nelson Thal, I want to thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much.
Oh, microphone on. Microphone
thanks very
on.
Much, John.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoyed it.
We'll have you back again sometime, and maybe we'll chat about other things other than conspiracy theories.
Yeah, we'll get on to some other harder topic.